Hey guys, it's Lane, and this is a Tripod Extra segment. This is a one-on-one interview. It's an extended interview with one of my guests from this week's episode, Ryan Fertel. He is a writer, teacher, and historian from Louisiana, living in New Orleans, and he just came out with an 8,000-word article in the Oxford American magazine on the tradition of the Mardi Gras flambeau carriers. And if you haven't heard yet, that's also what this week's Tripod episode is about. And I actually ran into Ryan at WWNO in the lobby of the radio station, and it was a serendipitous moment. He was there to talk to somebody else, and I found out that he had, you know, had this article that was coming out, and we ended up having a really great conversation. You can hear a bunch of that in this week's Tripod episode, but, you know, Ryan and I talked for a long time, and I thought that this was an interview worthy of sharing with you all. So this is one of those Tripod Extras where we release extended interviews with guests. And, you know, Ryan has a lifelong fascination with Mardi Gras flambeau carriers. He researched them for the past 5 years, and the result is this article. So after you listen to this conversation between Ryan and myself, go find the article in print, online, and read it. It's called The Keepers of the Light, and it's in the March edition of Oxford American. But for now, you know, if there's any reason that you're not listening to me speaking to you via your podcast app, go subscribe to Tripod in your podcast app, and you can write us a review in iTunes. That's going to keep us growing, and it's going to let us know what you think of the show. So do that. Listen to this. Check out the full episode on flambeau, and enjoy my conversation with Ryan. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, good to be here.
You just wrote this article. What is this? How recent is this issue?
It comes out, I believe, the first or second week of March, and this is the Oxford American magazine. And it's a big article. It's like an 8,000-word article about flambeau carriers in New Orleans. And it's something I've been researching for several years, 4 to 5 years I've been researching. And then carried the torch myself after lots of internal debate 2 years ago.
If you want to talk about it, I would love to hear about your decision and your reckoning with the decision to carry. But if you can, would you just kind of lay out what happened after World War II with the flambeau?
Yeah, so it's 1946. It's Mardi Gras Carnival time, 1946. And the city had, because of World War II, the city had not held Mardi Gras for 4 years, since 1941. Or they had skipped it for 4 years. And the papers of the period leading up to Mardi Gras in 1946 described the city as like very mirth-starved and just kind of like very famished for the pomp of Mardi Gras, the pomp and pageantry of Mardi Gras. And I don't doubt it. I mean, I could not imagine 4 years without Mardi Gras. And so Mardi Gras rolls around for the first time in a long time, it must feel like. And a central component of Mardi Gras disappears from the streets, and that is the flambeau carriers. And the flambeau carriers are men, African-American men, historically, who carry these cross-shaped wooden sticks. At the top of these wooden sticks is a big pot or can of kerosene, 2 gallons of the gas of the stuff. Altogether, it weighs about 70 pounds. It's these kind of massive, kind of, you know, medieval-looking instruments. And they carry these cross-shaped torches to light the streets, historically, to light the streets for the parades, for the processions, for the carnival processions. And 1946 rolls around, and the flambeau carriers go to the Mardi Gras den, where the floats and other, you know, instruments of Mardi Gras are kept. And they ask for higher pay. And they were refused that higher pay by the crew captains, first by the captain of Momus. And so they strike. And that strike for higher pay continues throughout that carnival weekend, throughout that season. And Momus and Comus and others march without lights. The newspapers Aldous say, you know, we're denouncing the strike, said that the crew captains did their best to appeal to the strikers, and that, you know, it was this very sad moment in Mardi Gras history, according to the newspapers. But the black newspaper, the Louisiana Weekly, which had been around since 1920, still around, kind of offered a different take, and they sent a reporter who's not named in like this long article about the strike in 1946. And they sent a reporter to like go interview Flambeau and people who were, at least knew who the Flambeau were. Members of the black community here in New Orleans, and they get these like really amazing quotes that I think really explain 1946, explain Mardi Gras. I think both in 1946 and in 2017. I could read some.
I would. I would love that.
One, the reporter just, you know, interviews people. None of these people are named, but one man told the Weekly's reporter that those white parades are not for colored people. We are able to attend because nobody has found out how to control a mob of people by roping off the streets and hanging out white and colored signs. After when the strike happened, the crew captains, Momus and Comus and others, like, appealed to veterans, war veterans. And they said, like, you know, for the good of the country, you know, it's for the good of Mardi Gras. So please, like, take this lower pay rate and come march as Flambeau. And these veterans, frankly, found this disgusting and didn't, like, scab. And so, this might be a veteran who was quoted in the same paper, said, of all the nerve appealing to veterans, there's not a place along the parade route where vets' wives or children can find seats to see parades. And then a third said, who in the hell wants to put on those monkey gowns and clown for people?
Wow. Do you know if the appeal to World War II veterans were specifically to African-American veterans or just...
Yeah. The Picayune States Item talk about appealing to black veterans to pick up the Flambeau, to, like, you know, to take the torch, to do it for America.
That it would be their patriotic honor.
Right. And they didn't. And so what happened is there was kind of a... The parades didn't have very many Flambeau, and if they did have Flambeau, they were carried by white New Orleanians.
That's also interesting. Just, you know, this lack of organization and yet unified response, both in terms of the Flambeau striking without any formal, you know, organization, union, and these veterans just all kind of being like, nah, yeah. You know, like, there wasn't. From what we know, it seems that there weren't, like, half of them were like, yeah, we're going to do this. And half were like, this is wrong. It just really seemed to be this unanimous, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was. It seems to have been a total strike, which is fascinating. And, you know, I mean, there's been, at least in my, like, what I know as a historian doing research, there's one other big strike in the history of Mardi Gras in the 1980s, and that's by the NOPD, and Mardi Gras was canceled that year, at least the big parades on the streets. So it's interesting that it was an across-the-board strike.
Yeah, wow. One of the things that I find interesting about Flambeau is that it is from the beginning. It is such an old tradition that has survived. What do you think about that, or what do you kind of chalk that up to?
Yeah, well, the Flambeau disappears really from the 50s to the late 80s, 90s for several reasons. One, it's because of those strikes. And second reason is because they were just this antiquated form of illumination. And so this, you know, the 60s and 70s, the same time when floats start putting, you know, neon and other flashy things and LED now. And so these floats become super floats and these crews become super crews. And they spend millions of dollars on illuminating the parade route, illuminating St. Charles in downtown New Orleans. And so there was no need for Flambeau, which traditionally was a way to light a poorly lit street. And third reason might just have to do with who were these Flambeau carriers. So they were a kind of, they are still a loosely coordinated, you know, band of African American men There is no like flambeau union. There are no flambeau dues. There is no flambeau club. There's no membership. You just show up at the staging ground at the beginning of the parade, and you get there early enough, and you get your stick. They call it your torch. And so without that, and with the great majority of Mardi Gras crews being white and white dominated, you know, there was why have these men do what they do? And there's one more reason, and that's the flambeau are dangerous, and they continue to be dangerous. I interviewed many flambeau over the years, and they talk about the danger. They talk about the inhalation of these kerosene fumes, the fires, you know, will sputter in wind and rain. You're carrying 2 gallons of kerosene above your head. Most of the older flambeau have stories of men and or spectators going up in flames. And so there were calls, there were op-eds in the local newspapers in the 60s and 70s to get rid of a flambeau. They were antiquated. They were dangerous. What need did they serve in this like modern world of lighting? It's interesting. They come back in 1993. They never, you know, went away completely. They continued to appear in a handful of parades.
Which also seems, if I think I'm correct in that being roughly around the year where there was the Mardi Gras ordinance of yes. integration.
Yes. And so all these, 1992, 93, the early 90s have to be the most important years in the history of Mardi Gras. So we have the integration of Mardi Gras crews, the forced integration of Mardi Gras crews by the city council. It's a great thing. And because of that, several crews, you know, didn't want to integrate, and they disappear, and some still, you know, remain, you know, disappeared from the streets of New Orleans. They no longer parade. This is Comus is the most famous. They can still hold their private ball, but a public procession down the streets of New Orleans with police protection is no longer allowed if they don't integrate their roles. And maybe one day they will, but I doubt it. 93, Harry Connick Jr., of all people, wants to kind of reimagine Mardi Gras, wants to lead a Mardi Gras renaissance. And so he founds a crew called Orpheus, which still parades on Monday night, the night before Mardi Gras. And he wanted floats that harken back to the floats of old, so less LED, more paper mache, with lights shining on foil instead of modern lighting. He also wanted flambeau, and he wanted flambeau to be back, and he wanted kind of like a strong kind of contingent of flambeau, either leading or following each float. And so he got designers, he got artisans to kind of replicate, refab some flambeau torches from the 19th century. And that's what they still use today. So I think he uses around 60 to 80 flambeau carriers. And they're always, each year he builds more torches, and they just add more men to the streets. And after that, more parades bring back the flambeau. They bring the flambeau out of storage. They bring them out of the dens. And so we have, you know, triple what we had, say, 20, 30 years ago.
When did you start to see the makeup of flambeau crews shift from being predominantly African American to having white people and women?
Yeah, it really happens in the 80s. So when flambeau is at its kind of is at a downturn in the number of flambeau carriers and the number of crews using flambeau. So you have the first women join the kind of contingent. You have the first white guy join. His name's Patrick Landry, and he is now a flambeau captain. He's a really big deal among the flambeau. He still marches every parade. The crew of Tux, as we know it today, was started by a couple Loyola students who wanted to join the flambeau ranks and who were turned away in their eyes for being young white men. And so they started the crew of Tux. And but it was originally started as this kind of like poke in the eye of the flambeau culture. And, you know, on their website and in newspaper articles from, you know, about the starting of Tux, they created like funny flambeau. And so they kind of poked fun at the flambeau. They got their, they, they got really drunk and would carry the torches. They would make fun of the flambeau. They would walk on their knees with the torches. It was satirical and maybe in poor taste, at least in my mind, for someone who is, you know, inspired by what the flambeau do and their history.
Sounds almost like I wasn't aware of that, but almost this precursor to the more recent Glambeau experiment.
Yeah, so Glambeau came on the scene. I think they paraded for 2 years. A couple years ago, they marched in at least Muses and maybe one other parade. And these were female flambeau. They were carrying the next generation of flambeau, which instead of the barrel of kerosene like perched above your head on the top of the cross, you wear a backpack filled with gas. Where the tubes are snaked to the torch, so it's easier to carry. It's certainly lighter. It's much much safer. The kind of veteran flambeau carriers denounce these things as inauthentic and just not real. They call them Ghostbusters because of their resemblance to like Ghostbusters backpacks, and but they did at least one or two of the veteran flambeau carriers kind of like. Practiced with the Glambeau, at least that's what newspaper reports, and that's what I remember reading the Glambeau's kind of Facebook page. But they were taught they were taught by flambeau carriers. They were denounced pretty heavily in like local blogs, and you know message boards as gentrifying a culture, as whitening a culture.
I also didn't know the origin of Crew of Tucks, which is. Fascinating because there are plenty of college students that are flambeau now.
Yeah, you'll see if you see white flambeau carriers nowadays, they are likely they're going to be young men and they're likely college students, the ones I've talked to at least. But I've met people here, tourists, Mardi Gras tourists, who have done it just because they heard about it. They know it's. Just like the traditional, the veteran flambeau carriers, it's a part, it's a way to be embedded in Mardi Gras, embedded in a parade without being of Mardi Gras. So without like paying those extravagant dues it takes to be a member of Hermes or, you know, Rex or whatever. Without, you know, picking up an instrument and going back to high school and being part of a marching band. So it's about participating, and I think just like the twin Mardi Gras mask, like I frown at it, like it is gentrification, but like I did it too eventually after years of doing the interviews and doing research and talking to these guys and being invited to do it. So I frown at what they do, but then I also like try to reconsider and, you know, think that, so, I mean, this is what Mardi Gras is all about. It's all about participation and, you know, Mardi Gras does not happen without you know, spectators, without involvement, without the spectators being involved with you know, the center, with the mass, with what's going on the street, with whatever is barricaded or cordoned off. There always has to be like a give and take with Mardi Gras. There's always kind of like melting of boundaries and walls.
You did march a couple of years ago. What's all that went through your head over the course of making that decision? It does seem like it was a fraught decision and based off of a lot of information and a lot of kind of awareness of what you were deciding to be doing by that, you know, as opposed to, let's say, a college student that's like, yo, we can make $50 and walk for 5 hours.
Yeah.
No, this you were coming at this knowing the implications. So just walk me through kind of the thought process and the decision.
After years of hanging out around the staging grounds and talking to flambeau carriers, Clarence Holmes, who started carrying when he was 14, he's 61, 62 years old now, and he's still there every parade. You could spot him. He usually wears tie-dye, and he's usually accompanied by his wife, who wears, like, the same matching, like, tie-dye outfit. After years of, like, trailing him, shadowing him, he challenged me. He said, are you gonna do this or not? And I said, no way. This isn't, like, me. It's not my culture. I'm just a reporter. And he pushed me, and so finally I said, okay, I'll do it. So I did it for Orpheus, Monday night before Mardi Gras 2 years ago. And, it was a wonderful experience. I mean, it was one of those like, you know, embedded journalism-y experiences. But like, I think with all of those experiences, once you cross certain boundaries, you know, different fears set in and it becomes sticky. And like, I think in the best of journalism, like embedded journalism experiences, things will go wrong. And it was a very stormy night. It was a very ugly night of weather. And I'm happy. I'm glad I participated. It's not something I'll ever do again.
You have a perspective of a participant and you have a perspective of a reporter. And you concretely married those things when you marched. But I'm wondering, change over time, how your own personal perspective and perception of Flambeau has evolved as it's taken on different forms and yet remained part of this tradition.
I mean, I think it began just as a kid and, like, you know, I've never been a pyro in any sense, but just like being interested in fire, and it just looked very different. The, you know, Mardi Gras involves so much just like standing. There's so much, all you do is stand in Mardi Gras, and Mardi Gras can be immensely boring. And I hope everyone who's ever been to Mardi Gras, done carnival, like agrees, is you stand in line for a drink, you stand in line for food, you stand in line for a bathroom. And if you go to those parades on St. Charles Avenue and elsewhere, you just stand.
Often behind 3 to 4 rows of standing people.
Or now you sit. Or as a kid, like I was on a ladder, right? And so you're sitting. But the Flambeau, like, never stand. They're walking, but like dancing the entire time. They're just like this constant movement. And when I moved back to the city after being away for a few years after the storm, I was just like, I want to know more about those guys. They were multi-generations of African-American men, like, doing something the same year, year after year after year, and doing something that seemed important, that had a rich history. They're actually, like, carrying lights that illuminate not just the floats and the dumb old king with his paste-on beard, but they're actually, like, lighting up themselves. They're actually bathed in this, like, firelight, and they're dancing at the same time. So it seemed just to me, at some point when I wanted like a new end to Mardi Gras, that was like, oh, well, this is someone to talk to.
What's the name of your article?
The name of the article is The Keepers of Light, and it's in the spring issue of the Oxford American Magazine, and it's also readable online.
Great. Well, Ryan Fertel, thank you so much for speaking with me, and I look forward to reading the article in full.
Thank you.